from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Darren, Donick, and Chase. With hosts Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5, The Game.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Chase will be back on the show tomorrow. Let's bring in our buddy Scott Burnside. Covers the league for, covers the NHL for The Athletic. Scott, sorry we were a little bit late. We had a surprise visit from an old friend of the show, former head coach in basketball, just called in, and so we went a little bit long, but thanks for being patient, and thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm always happy to come on, and I'm always, I was just scrolling through social media, checking out all the reports from the two hub cities in Toronto and Edmonton, so I'm trying to get up to speed. We're, the clock is ticking before we actually see real live hockey game, so pretty darn exciting.
I know, isn't it crazy? Like this Saturday morning at 11 o'clock in the morning our time, and well, I guess 11 o'clock in the morning your time too, right? You're on Central Time Zone.
No, Eastern here in Georgia, but
that's right. You're down in Georgia. That's right.
Yep.
But at noon your time, 11 our time, that we'll be able to flip on the television. And starting then, all the way to probably midnight or 1 o'clock your time, we will have hockey, you know, from sunup to sundown, well into sundown, all day long starting this Saturday. That's going to be so cool.
It is. And actually, I was just looking at the schedule because I was trying to figure out. Because I think that Winnipeg-Calgary game goes at 10:30 on Saturday evening. So, yeah, so really we're talking noon my time, so noon Eastern till 1 a.m., give or take. So that's a pretty good day.
And not bad.
So, yeah.
And all qualifying round games, right? All qualifying round games. No round-robin games on Saturday. So all these games will be game one, you know, of a critical series.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I like how, again, it hurts my head. Because I've been trying to get my, you know, sort of a handle on the how the broadcasting schedule is going to work and how you got 24 teams in two cities. How will that first 10 days unfold? And my understanding of it is that the round robin games fit in nicely in that, you know, once they move to three games a day in each of the hubs, or on most of the days three games a day, that middle game, so let's call it 4 Eastern or 3 Central. Is a good, that's often around robin game slot, because that's a finite amount of time, because even, you know, even if it goes to overtime in a shootout, because the round robin games are governed by regular season rules, you know it's only going to take 2 hours, 45 minutes, or whatever it is. The other games, because they're true, I use my air quotes here, they're playoff games, you know, those games, like that noon game, Rangers-Carolina, you know, it may not get done till 3 or 3:30 or 4 p.m. Eastern, right? You never know. So it's, and I think that's the other thing, too, that fans have to understand is that there's some elasticity to the schedule because it is playoff hockey for the 8 play-in series. So you don't know for sure when it's going to get over, and it may cause some adjustments for the start time for the games that follow. So, yeah, no, it's a lot of moving parts to it, but, boy, it's pretty exciting to consider.
I have to believe that Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, and everybody associated with the National Hockey League feel really good about, you know, where the NHL set up right now. When you look at what's going on with Major League Baseball, I mean, they just started on Thursday. I mean, there were just two games. Actually, if you really want to say it, the whole league started on Friday, if you really want to get down to it. And here we sit on, you know, first thing this Monday morning, and there's already two games canceled tonight. And so it is already very alarming because they're not in a bubble situation like the NBA in the NHL that are about to get cranked up this week. So they have to feel really good about Edmonton and Toronto and the setup, and already the testing to this point, just finding out in the last week, zero positive test. I have to believe they feel good going into this, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I'm sure, yes, there is a real sense of optimism. You mentioned it. I think I'm looking at the release, 4,256 tests during phase three, so the training camp phase. And I know in talking to coaches and officials, not on-ice officials, but team officials, league officials, that phase three was going to be critical because they weren't in a bubble in Nashville and in Toronto and all the other cities. So they had to rely on players really taking care of themselves. Obviously, they were being tested, I want to say every day during phase three, but certainly, you know, there was certain really unknown quantity to it, because we know going into phase three that there were some players who didn't take care of themselves. There were some positive tests. There were lots of reports of, you know, maybe unofficial workouts and not taking the kind of care that they needed to. But it didn't result in a vast number of positive tests. And then once the phase three started, and that was the real, I think, the turning point from a lot of people I've talked to, people have hunkered down, they've done what they need to do, and in theory, you can get everyone into Edmonton and Toronto without any positive tests or with a very small number that you can then, you know, deal with, separate those players, and you can really move forward. And once you're in the bubble, if the bubble works the way it's supposed to, yeah, you got a real chance at making this happen. And it would be such a tremendous success story, not just for the NHL, not just for the game of hockey, but I think for, you know, look around, you know, where we're at, especially in this country, in the United States, you know, we haven't got our arms around this virus. So to see a success story like this, I think would be, you know, would be educational on a lot of levels. And certainly, you know, for people who have been clamoring and pining for some sense of normalcy, to be able to sit down and watch this. You mentioned Major League Baseball, and that's a great example. I mean, just think of all the effort that goes into it, and it looks like it may turn to dust in a matter of days. And listen, the NHL, you know, no, I'm sure no one with the league or connected to this is resting on their laurels right now. Hey, we haven't even started yet. But to get to this point, the signs are very positive moving forward as we now approach real actual games, exhibition games starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, you're right. You don't want to get too confident, right? You always have to be optimistic but cautious about where this is really headed or how it's going to truly play out. Scott Burnside on the line with us, covers the NHL for The Athletic. So the last couple of weeks we were doing our show in Bridgestone Arena around Predators training camp, and that was a lot of fun. And last week when we were there, we spoke with, had a really interesting conversation with Craig Morgan, who's been covering the Coyotes for a long time, about the opponent for the Predators starting on Sunday. That'll be game one. But it was before we got into the players and the team and the matchup and all the good stuff, we talked about their situation in their front office, and it was pretty alarming to hear, you know, some of the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. Long, you know, a meeting with Taylor Hall and his folks on a long-term future, trying to convince him to stay with the Coyotes organization without the general manager. And that, of course, has the alarms going off, right? Like, you know, like immediately that spells trouble on that front. So happy for former Predator Steve Sullivan, who's now been named the interim general manager. What the heck has been going on in Arizona with that general manager situation?
Yeah, it did certainly unravel, and unraveled at a most curious of times. I think, and really, it was a lot of different things in the air. Certainly both sides have been pretty quick to point fingers at the other as being dishonest or not telling the entire truth. But the bottom line is that it did appear that John Chaika, the GM, did entertain a different job position of some kind, and that ultimately led to a very acrimonious separation between the team and the GM on the eve of the playoffs. And you're right, it's going to be, I'm less in, you know, I mean, the details are kind of salacious and titillating because there's a lot of he said going on, you know, behind the scenes on this. To me, what's more fascinating, okay, what happens now? Because this is a franchise, you know, I've been covering this for a long time, and so I've spent a lot of time wondering, you know, the arena deals, and will they move, and will they end up leaving town, and ownership change? Like, it has been a non-stop cavalcade of errors for this franchise, literally since they left Winnipeg in the late 90s. And they now have ownership in Alex Mariello, and they now look like they're in a position where they might actually be able to make a new arena happen in the Valley. Of course, they can't stay in Glendale, right? They're on the wrong side of the Valley. It's been that way for 20 years almost. So now ownership has a chance to maybe correct that fatal error. And now this happens. I think this is a great opportunity if ownership is smart and if they do this correctly to maybe write a new chapter and to bring in a really strong hockey ops department and create the kind of management structure that you see successful teams have. And, you know, I think of a team, you know, like Tampa, where ownership has been so strong. They've hired good people, starting with Steve Yzerman as the GM, and then that's bled into Julian Breezeball, who took over for Yzerman. Got people in the right spots. Let them do their job. Bring in lots of good, smart hockey people. To me, that means guys like, you know, Steve Sullivan. I don't know whether he's ready to be the GM, but guys like Shane Doan or Sean Burke. And listen, they have an opportunity here to maybe finally get this all right in Arizona. And I'm curious to see whether it happens that way, because it's been, frankly, you know, it has been, if not a full-on laughingstock, then bits of a laughingstock for many, many years. And this, what happened on Sunday, was just another sort of a chapter to that. It's embarrassing for the franchise. I'm sure it's embarrassing for everyone connected to the team. And it's going to be interesting. I see it having zero impact on the on-ice competition. Tocchet's too good a coach. I don't think the players, maybe they don't care, but they shouldn't at this stage. It doesn't really affect them. So, but it will be interesting to see, you know, because that's now part of the narrative of this play-in series.
And Scott, that is the $64,000 question, as you just illustrated, right? We could do hours of talk on all of the different challenges that franchise has faced, especially just since they decided to put that arena where it is right now. It's created all kinds of issues. So it's like these guys are used to it, right? It's not like they've never had this kind of thing before. So I don't know that you could even argue it's that much of a distraction for the team, or, you know, because that's where the Predators and all their fans would want to know is this a distraction that would affect the Coyotes' play on the ice? I would argue no.
Yeah. Well, and then we already know, and certainly it's been well reported that, you know, for a guy like Taylor Hall, who is so critical to that team, and is headed for free agency whenever this season ends in the fall. There have been some talks with the Coyotes about extending his stay there. And, you know, does that affect his view of the team long term? I guess time will tell, but he's already met with new ownership and the new CEO, Xavier Gutierrez, without John Chyka there. So, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I've been told, or the expectation was, that Taylor Hall would sign an extension in Arizona. I don't know if that changes now with John Chyka leaving, but in terms of the here and now, I really don't see that having any kind of impact at all at what happens. And in fact, you know, Rick Tocchet, I'm sure, will be reinforcing, hey, we're in a bubble in Edmonton. You know, let's use that bubble, you know, both metaphorically and physically. We're going to insulate ourselves from all talk and all discussion about what's going on at the management level. It's probably good that they're in the bubble. So I doubt that there will be any issue with focus for that team. And I think this is one of the series, there of the eight, there are probably six or seven that you're like, yeah, I don't know, really? I don't have a real feel for it. Maybe six. But this is one of them. I have zero feel for it. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. But I don't see how any of this has an impact on whatever the Coyotes do on the ice, whether they win or lose. It won't have anything to do with John Chyka's departure on the eve of the play-in round, in my opinion.
Okay, so let's you've kind of whet our appetite for what series you do think. Let's focus on the West, because I think, you know, for the Predators and our listeners, that's going to be the focus for a while here. Of the series that are going on in the qualifying round, besides the Predators and the Coyotes, what do you have the strongest feeling for of any of the matchups?
Yeah, I mean, the strong feeling in the sense that, okay, I can look at that and say, yeah, I have a real feel for this. Obviously, Edmonton should have no problem at all with Chicago, the 12th place team. You know, Corey Crawford had tested positive for COVID-19 early in the proceedings. He missed most of training camp. The Blackhawks were going to be overmatched anyway. I don't think defensively they've got any answers for the Oilers. And so even with Patrick Kane and some really good young talent, and of course Jonathan Toews, I see Edmonton as being, they should not lose this series, right? There's no way that should happen. So, but the other three, I think you can make a strong case, or at least a partial case, for all those teams. And that includes a team like Minnesota that, you know, again on paper probably doesn't stack up that well against Vancouver, but listen, that team has a lot of veteran players, guys like Zach Parise, Eric Staal, Ryan Suter, Mikko Koivu. These are guys who are not now at the end of an 82-game grind. And, you know, I know Zach Parise for years really has struggled with injuries, back injuries, those kinds of things that have hampered his play come playoff time. Now those guys are healthy, ready to go. Kevin Fiala, I think we might have talked about him last time we chatted. He's really, you know, a renaissance player from the start of this season to the end. And with Stalock in goal, I don't know. Like, I don't see Minnesota winning that series, but if it happens, I wouldn't be all that surprised. And the other one I'm curious about is that Winnipeg-Calgary series, because people hate the Flames. I don't know why, but there's complete lack of respect for the Flames. Top team in the Western Conference a year ago. Everyone loves the Jets, and yes, great coaching, and I think probably the Vezina Trophy winner and Connor Hellebuck, but you know that Flames team can really fly, and I don't see why there is this, you know, this sort of disregard for the Flames team, so I'm curious to see that series as well, so it's going to be fun.
I think the whole thing is going to be fun. You said a couple of times you wouldn't be too surprised if one team or another won. Just in a 3 out of 5, Scott, and just knowing the way, just the nature of a hockey game where you can just have a couple of fun games where things go your way, or you know, just boil it down to one guy, like the goalie, you just get on a roll. Would we really be surprised if any one team won, especially in the 3 of 5?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And we know historically that the first round of the playoffs is always rife with upsets and curious, you know, I think of the Predators in 17, right? I mean, they sweep Chicago. You just know crazy stuff's going to happen in the first round. Last year, Columbus sweeps 62-win Tampa. So in the play-in round, and you're absolutely right, with 5 games, to me, it's such a challenge for the coaches because you don't have any kind of window to ride stuff out. Like, I think of, you know, when Washington won the Cup in 18, Philip Grubauer started the first 2 games of that series,
right,
against Columbus. The Caps get down 2-0, and then Braden Holtby comes back in, reassumes the starter's role, and they run the table. You don't have any kind of luxury like that in the best of 5. So if you're thinking of a goaltending change, boy, you have to, like the leash is so much shorter, and that extends to the rest of your lineup. If you've got guys who aren't going, and because the rosters are expanded, you do have options. I think that's the real challenge for coaches in those play-in rounds. When do you pull the trigger? When do you, you know, because you don't want to look like you're panicking, but if you wait too long, you can be done in 5 days. So it really is. I think it's going to be a real challenge for the coaches. And there are some tremendous coaching matchups. I think of that Islander-Florida series where you got Barry Trotz and Joel Quenneville. Joel's going to the Hall of Fame. I think Barry likely will go to the Hall of Fame whenever he's done coaching. And they're going to square off 2 very different teams. But and it's going to be a battle of 2 of the greatest coaches of this generation in a 5-game series. I can't wait for that either.
Scott, none of us can wait. We have been patiently waiting for all this time to hit the restart here. We all are very thankful that this atmosphere was created, that the players and the owners came together to get this thing settled, and so now it's time to play here in a couple days. Even these exhibition games, everybody's been joking, Scott, these are probably going to be the highest rated television ratings that you could get for exhibition games. There's no doubt about it, right? It's whether it's official or unofficial, people are going to be watching these games. So this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, no question. And I'll tell you, having been to exhibition games, there's in general, historically, there's nothing worse than a preseason NHL game. It may be the worst thing in the world in terms of sports. But yes, I will be tuning in. So that tells you something.
No question. Scott, thanks a lot for your insight. As always, sit back and enjoy, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Anytime, guys.
All right, Scott Burnside from The Athletic. If you're looking for some insight on what has happened out with the Coyotes, with the former Predator, Steve Sullivan, taking over as the interim GM for John Chyka, who, from the team's perspective, they say he quit. There's a lot that went on behind the scenes, but the simple answer is he's no longer the GM. Steve Sullivan takes over. A compelling storyline, if nothing else, for the qualifying series between the Predators and the Coyotes that starts on Sunday afternoon. Of course, we'll have all the coverage here on 102.5 The Game, Fox Sports Tennessee. Thursday, we'll have that same coverage for the showcase game against the Dallas Stars. So a lot of exciting stuff coming from Edmonton this week. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on 102.5 The Game.
You can get two tickets for two parks for the price of one. That's two tickets for the price of one. Beach Bend and Splash Lagoon Water Park on sale right now. Go to GameNashville.com. Click on Beach Bend. Buy one, get one free. To purchase your tickets now for only $37.99. Sounds like a good deal to me, especially during these hot days. Man, would have liked to have been at a water park this weekend, especially after yesterday. Three games outdoors. Woo! It was hot, as a lot of you know. We got some really, really heavy rain, like Saturday evening around, I don't know, 8 o'clock, 7, 8 o'clock. But I hear that there seems to be a lot of pop-up storms. I don't know if you were in Kentucky, so never mind. Scratch that. I was going to ask you, did you get that on East Nashville? Scratch that. Good stuff there from Scott, as always. I'll have a conversation with Jeremy K. Gover. We'll talk more about the Predators in depth at 1 o'clock. I know you've got to step away then for a little bit. But anything stand out with our conversation with Scott?
Well, I'm excited about Steve Sullivan's opportunity here.
Yep.
You know, as we know, myself included, sometimes a twist of fate opens up a window of opportunity for somebody. And I don't know... I've certainly never talked to Steve Sullivan about, does he aspire to be a general manager in the NHL? He has been really, really highly regarded in the job that he is doing in the player development. He's really the Scott Nickel of Arizona, right? We were talking about Connor Garland, the young, built a lot like Steve Sullivan, undersized, quick. There's been a lot of accolades for Steve Sullivan and how he's developed Connor Garland. So he's really done well in that area. Now, does he want to be a GM? He's certainly got the talent evaluation part of it, but what about the salary cap and all of these things dealing with ownership? Is that something he really wants long term? But it's interesting that he gets this job right before that team is taking on the Predators in the qualifying round. So if nothing else, it's a sexy storyline.
We'll make our picks on Friday. We'll make just the first the qualifying round picks on Friday. Let's see how well or how horribly we do. Okay? We'll do that on the show. We'll pick a segment on Friday's show and we'll make our picks. It's never easy. NHL picks are tough.
What series for you in the West, Darren, intrigues you the most?
This
do,
is
do you have a outside of the Predators and the Coyotes?
Intrigued. Well, look, we're going to do everything like, you know, we're not going to pick because we all know what we're going to pick. So we're going to leave a lot of that stuff just off the side and state the obvious, you know, without saying, oh, besides the Predators and Coyotes, because that just kind of goes without saying. For me, it is the intriguing one with no hesitation is Winnipeg and Calgary. You didn't have to say in the West. If you'd have said any qualifying round series, I think Winnipeg and Calgary, for me, is fascinating because I just think I have no idea where that's going. No idea. I think that's going to be a fun series. Get a dartboard out, get a coin, whatever reference you want to use. That's going to be, for me, probably the hardest series to pick when we do that on Friday because simply I have no idea. Probably Vancouver, Minnesota would also kind of fall into that category. Not sure exactly where that's going.
I think there's a lot of not sures.
I'd probably lean toward Vancouver, but, you know, I'm not positive about it. I don't feel strongly. In other words, I feel probably the least strongest about those two because I think they're toss-up series.
Something jumped out at me when he was talking about Winnipeg and Calgary. And I heard this reflected in an interview. I was just listening to the NHL channel. And there was a guy on from Calgary, and he was just talking about how cynical and skeptical all the Flames fans are about the team. And Scott mentioned something to that effect. Whereas Winnipeg, they had injury issues. They had the whole Dustin Byfuglien thing. And I think there was a lot of expectations that dropped. And so the fact that Winnipeg was even competitive, I think there's a little bit, a little engine that could. There's the view of the fans is a little bit more, hey, they've done a really good job under some tough circumstances. And Calgary is kind of like, these guys are bums. We're never going to win with these guys. We need to shake it up. So it's a real interesting contrast with those two. And the clear-cut difference between the two teams is you have Winnipeg, who Connor Hellebuyck carried them the whole year. If you look at the stats and what Winnipeg has been giving up defensively, he's made up for a lot of mistakes that they've made. Whereas Calgary, it's, you know, they have all these talented forwards that get all of the headlines. And then they have the goalies that they've been rotating and trying to find the right guy for a long time now.
Yeah.
Since they had Mika Kiprusoff.
Well, it's not like, you know, they've been bums. In the last couple of years.
It's just the lack of playoff success gives you a label.
Right. They just keep getting ousted, right, in the first round. And so I think one year, probably about 5 years ago, I think they made it to the second round. But other than that, they keep getting ousted in the first round and actually not even competitive, right? Remember the one year they got swept by the Ducks?
The interview that I was referencing, Darren, they threw out an incredible stat. Since Crispy took the Flames to the Stanley Cup title in 1989, I can't remember the exact number, but it's a strikingly low amount of series that they have won. They got to the Stanley Cup final 4, right, and lost to Tampa Bay, Vincent LeCavalier. But there's just very, very few runs that they've made over the long, long haul. So it's, and in particular, as you were saying, under this group, the last decade or so, it hasn't come together. But you never know what can happen. As Scott was saying, everybody's removed from that environment that they get, that vibe that surrounds them. And the Predators fell into that vibe. Right at times. Last year there was a vibe as they were going towards the playoffs. Everybody knew they were going to be in the playoffs, but there was like, hey, something's not right. Why isn't it going as easily as it thought? They won the Central Division, right? But there was still the kind
it
of
still
this.
Still felt off.
Is something wrong? Something feels wrong, you know? Yep. And so every team that has that gets away from that in this, right? Except for the Zoom calls. But I would think you feel more detached from it.
Well, just like what you said, I think probably what's all that is in play with Calgary, and then, oh, by the way, the big scab is last year that I think keeps getting ripped off, right? I think that scab just continues to bleed for the Flames because, like the Predators, they won the division. They won the Pacific, and look at the year that they had. What did they have? They had well over 100 points. I think it was close to 110 points, and they got just blasted by the Avalanche, right? I mean, they really weren't ever in it, and it's like, wow, you had this really good regular season, you win the division, and you're high seed, and you just get blasted by the Avalanche. So that one, to me, is probably the one that's kind of put them where they are today, where it's just like, you know, the fans are like, pff, pff, we've seen this before. We've read this book. We know how it ends, right? They're just probably, there's just not much optimism with the fan base because of what we just threw out there.
Remember how much of that was going on with the Capitals before they ended up winning it, right? How much cynicism there was on behalf of their own fans because they couldn't get past Pittsburgh. You know, then they got down 2-0 with Grubauer. They were in overtime of the third game against the Columbus, you know, with when they did make the switch to Braden Holtby. And they barely won that game. And then, as we know, they climbed the mountain. So anything can happen, for sure. Now, let me throw another one at you, Darren. Watch what happens if either Chicago or Montreal wins game one against Edmonton or Pittsburgh. Can you imagine the craziness, the freak out that is going to happen? Just because it'll be so exciting just to see if those teams can rebound, right? Because those are heavy favorites. Pittsburgh and Edmonton are heavy favorites in their series. But in the reality, in one hockey game, the worst team can beat the best team. We know that. And then there's the X factor of nobody's played a game in months. So do you think, I mean, if you had to bet, right, and somebody says, okay, I'm going to give you Chicago and Montreal, this could be something we would do in a pick six kind of thing, right? Would you take one of them to win, Chicago or Montreal, in game one?
Well, I don't treat those series the same. So I guess my answer would be
no. Yes.
I would give Chicago a chance. But no, I don't view the series.
I'm just saying to win game one, not necessarily win the series. Just one of them wins game one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I thought you meant to go on to pull the upset. I mean, Edmonton.
No,
has done
no.
Nothing.
I'm saying
Pittsburgh is.
You're making a bet on those two games.
Oh,
and I give you the combo.
Oh my gosh.
You have two
all
games to
day.
Win one.
Oh my, all day.
Even though they are 12 seeds and they are big underdogs in
series.
I'd
lay money right now. One of them wins game one. And I'd lay good money. Yes.
Without
no hesitation. One of them wins game one. Yes.
I wonder what kind of odds you get on that.
I don't know, but I'm just telling you right now, I'll go on and hit that.
You would take it.
I'd hit that button and say, I'll take that. Yes. 100%. One of those two teams will win that game one. I would do that.
I tend to agree.
Considering?
And imagine.
Look, it's already.
Now, Pittsburgh's been through it. Pittsburgh has been through the battles for the most part. I think mentally they would handle it better. Edmonton playing in their home city, losing to Chicago in game one, which absolutely could happen, that would put a lot of mental strain, I think, on that young team.
That's the way I view it. Like Pittsburgh, if they lose game one to me, it doesn't mean anything. Pittsburgh's been there, done it, man. This stuff's old hat to them. Postseason play, you know, playoffs for the Penguins, they get it. I mean, that, to me, Edmonton's the one that's done nothing. So there's nothing other than they got star power, but they have it. It's like Toronto, right? It's great. You got all this star power, but you haven't done anything in the playoffs. So Toronto hasn't been able to go the first round. When Edmonton has, you know, I would be more. Definitely more nervous if I was an Edmonton Oilers fan if they lost game one, even though I think they'll win the series, I think. But I wouldn't – I would be more – I think they will be way more panicky than a fan base of the Penguins. How they've earned the right for the fan base not to panic if they go down 0-1. I mean, give me a break.
Sure.
What does a team have to do to earn your trust? I think they've done that. They should. So I just don't view them the same. I don't know.
Also,
I don't know if either one can pull off the upset for the series, but if you're asking me, would I place money to say one of those two teams can take game one in that series all day long? Yes.
This is why it's going to be so compelling. All about it. Do you think it's a disadvantage for the Leafs. Now, this is another one. If they were to lose game one to the Blue Jackets, who swept Tampa last year, albeit with more of a loaded team than they have now, but that's a scrappy team that has a great underdog mentality. They've got a coach who really likes that part of it. If they just play that real tight defensive style and they frustrate the heck out of the Maple Leafs, can you imagine the negativity vibe that will be all over and the pressure that the Maple Leafs guys will feel? You think it's bad? It would be bad in Edmonton. How about the Maple Leafs?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Don't you think that's – I feel this, the two hub city – the two host teams in the hub cities, I think there's more pressure on them than anybody because their fan bases are, you know, are absolutely all in on their team, but are also, you know, very critical and very much glass is half full and pessimistic. I mean, they just, you know, it's like the, oh, here we go again, the minute they lose a game, right? That'll be, especially in Toronto, especially with the Leafs fans. So there's no doubt that those two, the two host cities, and their fan bases with their teams, if they get down, it'll feel like doom and gloom. They will not feel good about it. Doesn't mean that those teams will lose, but they won't feel good about it.
I've got another question for you. You are the coach of the Blues or the Avalanche, right? And for that matter, all of the teams that get a bye and are playing these round-robin games. Are you trying to win those round-robin games? Or are you going to rest people? Are you going to play both goalies? Are you going to approach them more like exhibition games? Because these are not elimination games. These are only for the seeds. What would your approach be to those games? Or do you want to try to build that competitive edge, that winning edge that you're going to have in the next round? How would you do it?
I'm going to have to trust our previous conversations in the past with people that are – current or former head coaches or current or former players that have told us repeatedly, you just don't turn on the switch. You don't just say, you know, for everybody that always thinks that you just turn on us this magic switch. And yeah, I know we've looked one way for a long way and I get it. This is different, right? I understand this is not normal circumstances, but we've been told over and over and over again for years from players and coaches, current and former, there is no magic switch. You just don't flip it and then you go back to normal, what you were accustomed to, or there's no switch that makes you do a 180. Whatever, you know, whatever was happening, you can change that by just starting the playoffs and going, okay, now it's time. I just have to trust that info because I feel like they know better than us. So I think with that being said, You gotta, especially under the circumstances of 4+ months of sitting, I don't know how you would want to ease into anything. To me, it's about getting in the right mindset now. Whether it's a round robin or a qualifying round, I get it. If you lose in round robin, it's just going to change your seed. That's it. It's not going to change you. It's not sending you home. But I just think the mentality's got to be, you got to start winning now. You got to get in that mindset and winning now. So I personally think it's a good question. It's a fair question. But I don't see why a coach would want to ease, you know, just kind of coast in round robin. And maybe some of them do. But if you're asking me, I say that they're going in there to win and get amped.
Would you let your backup goalie play a game?
Yeah.
Or would you go with your guy for all three?
Yeah, no, I would let the back because we keep saying you're going to need both. So if you're going to need both, then yes, needs to see something live.
So that immediately makes it different right there just with the whole thing. If you're playing your backup goalie, then it's a different approach than maybe you would. I'll be curious to see if anybody just gets hammered in any of those games and just kind of says, well, you know, this isn't a big deal.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back.
David Pastrnak is one that they're going to be supposed to be careful with him. You know, he has not practiced with the team since the camp opened. he got back late, all this stuff. So that's one of the things. They haven't disclosed why, but he's obviously a huge player for the Bruins. But there's some speculation that they'll be very careful with him in the round-robin play because he's behind everybody.
We will come back and wrap up the third hour. Darren Donick and Chase next. Big news coming out of the baseball world. Marlins home opener versus the Orioles postponed. Marlins remain in Philadelphia. They are currently being quarantined in Philadelphia, and depending on today's test results, the team would bus to Baltimore to play tomorrow's game there instead of Miami. So that is some of the stuff that's coming out right now, that depending on today's test results, like I said, the team has remained in Philadelphia, being quarantined, depending on today's test results, team would then bus to Baltimore and play tomorrow's game there instead of Miami. With others from the taxi squad joining the club there as well, subbing in. So the other piece of news is the Yankees were set to play the Phillies in Philadelphia. Of course, that's where the Marlins just came from, and that game tonight has been postponed as well. And right now, MLB is strongly considering calling off tomorrow's game as well between the Yankees and the Phillies. So a lot of scrambling going on behind the scenes for Major League Baseball, what to do. We knew this was coming. Didn't know at what length it would be. Obviously, 14 positive tests for one team is a lot. 12 of those are players. Two were coaches, but 14 Miami Marlins testing positive for coronavirus, and that has had everything that's had them slamming the brakes and everything on their end coming to a screeching halt, and we'll see what baseball does moving forward.
Crossroads for sure, huge test to see if they can maneuver through this. And I know there's a lot of people worried, and your first gut reaction I think is a natural one. I was watching Get Up this morning with Mike Greenberg, and I thought he was just gonna jump through the TV, and he just kind of, what are they gonna do now? What are they gonna do? Oh my God!
I know.
But you have to hope. You have to hope that they were prepared for this. You hope that it doesn't happen, but you had to be ready for it. You knew, especially the way they were going about this with the travel and the planes and the hotels and the contact you would have with other people, that this was possible. So now what happens? You got me. But hopefully they can maneuver through it. Guys like J.J. Bleday might be playing in a Marlins uniform in real games. That's the reality of this. So it's a season that will be remembered. Always, it's going to be way different than any other season, and you could have some wacky results, but I think the best thing to do, if you can, is, be safe, number one, but find every way you can to continue to play and get through it. And the whole thing of shut everything down right now, not now, there's a lot of different things that can happen, and maybe you do have to get to that point at some point, but not today, not at this moment. Take your time, take a deep breath, sort it out, and figure out the next move.
I just saw the top 10 play again, and it was definitely in right field. It was down the right field line on Tony Kemp and the Angels outfielder. I'm drawing blanks on his name. Is this Kirk Casale's? Yeah, here's Casale's. His was dead center, 404. Tiger center fielder catching it up over the wall at the 404 mark. So Kemp and Casale both getting robbed. Both of those plays made the top 10. I was just reading a tweet from David Price. I don't know if you saw that in the last hour. This was David Price's tweet that he's put out in the last hour. Now we really get to see if Major League Baseball is going to put players' health first. Remember when Manfred said players' health was paramount? Part of the reason I'm at home right now is because players' health wasn't being put first. I can see that hasn't changed. So that coming from David Price in the last hour. And everybody will be curious to see what happens.
Everybody's got to have their own everybody has to have their own viewpoint. I'm sure this is the kind of thing that he was concerned about. But this is the other part that I want to know more is, are the players asymptomatic? I mean, this is the real concern would be if somebody is sick and not feeling well, and then you're infecting others, who, and then you get to the next layer of, did they take it home to somebody who's vulnerable and really is at risk of having some long-term effects for this? That's where you get into these things. But everybody views it differently, I think, and this is why it was smart to give the players the opportunity to sit this one out. And I think David Price or any player that chose to do that is justified.
49ers have just finalized a new deal with Raheem Mostert, the running back who said he wanted out. So looks like they have got all their things worked out, and he'll be staying with the 49ers. So that was kind of a weird deal when he was like, hey, I want out. And I was like, wait a minute, he's kind of an important piece to their offense. Well, the 49ers, John Lynch, have finalized a new deal for him. And so all was well in Northern California between him and the organization. We will come back. Fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. We'll start things off with Jeremy K. Gover. We'll talk about the Predators as they get ready for their exhibition game on Thursday with the Stars, and then they'll get things cranked up on Sunday afternoon against the Coyotes. We will do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.